can you introduce yourself, let everyone know where you work and what you do?
Yes, I'm James Corona. I work for Still Austin Whiskey. We're a whiskey distillery in Austin, Texas. I say Austin, I mean Austin proper. We're not like Houston and we live in Sugar Land. We are just outside of downtown Austin. We make 100% of our juice, as they say. So we make everything. We don't buy anything with 100% Texas grain. So everything's grown in Texas as well.
How hard is that to do?
A lot.
Yeah? Yeah. Like what goes into it?
Which part?
Like the growing, like what? Like how do you source that stuff?
Yeah, so we use a farm up kind of in the panhandle. Cool thing about Texas is essentially almost any kind of climate you're interested in, we have. And so up in the panhandle, they grow a ton of grain up there. We're using kind of a smaller farm. I think the last I heard was the guy was saying we're buying like 60% of his grain or something like that for making whiskey. We essentially, I mean, we buy like some other stuff occasionally, but mostly we're buying corn, rye, and malted barley. So those are the three that we use for everything we distill for the most part. We have some specialty stuff that we come out with every now and then, some like red corn, blue corn, different things like that. But for the most part, we're just buying those three.
How long has the company been around?
Company's been around for about 7 years, I believe. With Chris Seals and his dad started the distillery. But when they first came on board, I mean, completely different bottle shapes, completely different products. We're making like what we call new make whiskey, so unaged whiskey. So you're distilling it and then just putting it right in the bottle. Okay. That's what they were doing. I mean, the packaging, the design, completely different. I don't think it's a company I would have joined back then. It's just completely different company, in my opinion. So what you see now with the bottle that I brought today and what we're doing and what we're releasing now is pretty new. I'd say it's about 4 years.
It's got a really big following for being around only, you know, less than 10 years. Yeah. I thought it had been around a lot longer than that.
For sure. So Chris Seals is the owner. He's formerly is like an economist. That's kind of his background. That dude is the most buttoned up. So I built and ran a spirit and wine distributor attached to a craft beer distributor in Nashville. And that's where I've been for the last 4 years before moving back to take this job. This is the most buttoned up company I've ever seen. Like, I've worked with a lot of brands and they're like, yeah, we used to sell shoes and now we sell tequila. And you're like, what the fuck? And they don't know shit about the industry. And I'll ask them, okay, like, so, you know, what's your CE goals? And like, what's a CE? And it's like, that's some pretty basic shit. If you're in the alcohol industry, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And
what
so,
is CE? Customer
case
experience?
Equivalent.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, okay. So it's
I work in the corporate world. Customer experience.
What is that?
But, I mean, that's what it is. Like, we have... I mean, I had to learn a lot of that shit, too. Obviously, you know, you're not born with that. But, yeah, I mean, if you're going to start an alcohol brand, you should probably know a pretty fucking good amount about the alcohol industry. A lot of people don't. I'd say the vast majority of brands that I've worked with have no background in alcohol. So they never waited tables. They don't know anything about it. They weren't bartenders. Mm-hmm. They just said, hey, George Clooney sold his company for $1 billion. Why not me? Mm. And so they did it. Chris Seals, on the other hand, is like the most smart, buttoned up guy. I mean, like when I first joined the company, I flew down to do their like all staff sales kind of training thing. Like they all the salespeople met up and he gave a presentation. It's the first time I met him. And it was like the most detailed, like intense presentation. I mean, he had it like broken up by like, here's how people feel about our brand on a Friday. Here's how it, like, it was just that it was, it wasn't specifically that, but it was like, here's how they feel about our brand. As like, how do they feel about it? You know, do they understand the identity? Do they understand who we are as a company? Do they get a sense of who we are? How do they feel about it, us compared to Maker's Mark? Like, it was just so detailed. He went through it. I feel like that guy knows every penny where it goes in the company. Like, it's just the most buttoned up I've ever experienced. And after that week, I was like, Jesus Christ, these guys know what they're doing. And I think that, and we brought on some, or they brought on, you know, us, some really, really talented people who've been in the booze business for a long time. And man, it's for the last, you know, 4 years, it's just exploded as a company. Mm. I think because of that, just making smart decisions.
Dang.
And did Seals picked it up when they were not aging the whiskey and all
he
that?
He started it.
He started
him
it.
Him and his dad. So Chris Seals and his father started the company from scratch. I haven't had a chance to really get into like the details of kind of, you know, how they did all that. But yeah, I think around seven years ago. And then they kind of retooled everything. They're working with a lady named Nancy, who's like a master blender. She kind of started in the cognac brandy world. Now she still does that, but she blends a lot of American whiskeys now. So distilleries will hire her to help with their final product. So they'll send product and go, hey, this is our 3-year bourbon. Is it any good? And she'll be like, it's not. It needs to age longer. Or you need to do this. She kind of helps them get stuff to market. So we work with her. We have like a pretty intense relationship with her where we don't put anything out without her approval. So nothing we release is okay to release until Nancy approves of it.
That's one person.
Yeah.
What if she's just complete bullshitting though? She's just, you know, she just
she's a beast. They call her the nose. She's really good. So every month at our distillery, we release a distillery only release. You can only buy it there. You can buy it online, but you got to pick it up at the distillery. We won't mail it out and you can't get it in stores. And it's her pick. We call it Nancy's pick. And she picks one every month and it's a 4-year single barrel. So just one barrel of whiskey. She picks the one that she thinks is tasting the best that month. And then we release that as a special. She's good.
Her whiskey is
so good.
That always really intrigues me. We've talked to a couple of wine like experts and wine owners. I'm always intrigued at like the process of tasting alcohol. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's a defined process of how to taste it. And I always think sometimes that these people are just kind of bullshit. Just a little bit, right? There's a little bit.
Well, there's okay, so have you seen the movie Psalm about the guys training to become master psalms? You got to watch it. It's awesome. But they'll in that documentary they explain like if you don't know what dead roses taste like, how the fuck can you pull it out of wine? You don't know what it tastes like. You'll never be able to taste that, but that is a taste that is in some wine. And so you actually have to train to be able to do tastings like that and to be at the level where like Nancy is. Like you have to study that shit. You have to train it. You've got to drink a lot and you've got to go, okay, well, like I get, you know, like Northern Scotland, you get a ton of caramel. Like you got to drink and eat a bunch of caramel to figure that out. Like you have to know what those things taste like. And so, yeah. And then, if you watch, there's another one called Sour Grapes and that'll prove that everything I just said is bullshit. Cause in that documentary, they're like, they trick a bunch of people. They get like high psalms and they're like, this is a blah, 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 blah. And they're like, oh, it's amazing. I love it. And it's like a $13 like Trader Joe's wine. So I don't know. It's mostly BS, but
yeah, I just don't know the world enough. Like to me, if like I'll trust my friend's recommendations, like if it's good, then I'm like, well, yeah. And then I'll take that, you know, to other people I don't know. This shit's good, or you know, based on my friend's recommendation, that's garbage. You don't want to drink that shit. I just don't know enough about it.
You have to have a palate for it. So like Nancy is phenomenal at what she does. Like that's her job is to taste and blend whiskeys. Right. You know what I mean? And brandies and stuff. So when I try her stuff as a guy who drinks a lot and somewhat knows a lot about alcohol, when I try it, I'm like, yeah, I can tell between what I had earlier and her pick, that's a better whiskey because she knows what she's doing. All that being said, if you're not trained in that kind of stuff, to you, a Maker's Mark tastes exactly the same as, you know, Pappy 20. Yeah. And so there's got to be at least some level you have to get to, I wouldn't say to enjoy it, but to like a really appreciate a good whiskey versus like a lower priced whiskey.
Can you tell, you know, the, depending on what farm or what, where, like the where the material comes from, can you tell like, well, that farm's not doing a good job because they do X or Y and they don't do what this place in the panhandle does?
Yeah, I mean there's definitely better producers of grain. I don't know like if I'm sure people could, but like picking out, oh, is this too dry or too, you know, watered it too much? I don't know about that, like how they'd be able to pick that out. But for a good example, we have 100% rye whiskey. So we use the grain mash bill is 100% rye. There's no other grain in it. And it's Texas grain. It tastes completely different than Indiana grain, which is where like 90%, if not more, of rye whiskeys come from. So there's a giant bulk facility. They just changed their name to something that I can't remember what their name is, but we always refer to it as MGP. It's Midwest Grain Producers. They make the vast majority of alcohol in the country. So if you go to like a liquor store shelf and like 50% of those bottles are just coming from MGP. That's where most of stuff comes from. They make rye whiskey, a ton of it. So even distilleries that make their own bourbon may not make their own rye. They'll buy MGP rye. And their rye is like, a lot of it can taste like you just cracked fresh black pepper into a whiskey, like literal fresh black pepper. Yeah. Ours, nothing like that. Like ours is very smooth. It's sweeter. Ours has like brandy cognac notes to it, like very fruit forward. And then baking spice, you get like cinnamon, allspice, clove. That's what I get on our rye. So it's, I don't know if it's like better or worse grain itself, like in and of itself, it's probably exactly the same, but where it's grown makes completely different on the flavor.
Yeah. I'm curious about like the like the agricultural aspect, like what kind of chemicals they're spraying on the rye. Do y'all pay attention to stuff like that too? Like, or do y'all try to do organic, or does that matter?
I'll say this, anyone who's using 100% like organic grain in their whiskey, that's $1,000 bottle, because the grain is just so expensive. If you're trying to be like non-GMO, non-pesticide, all that. That being said, I mean, after distillation, especially if you're running it more than one pass through a still, or if you're using like a column still, like a lot of plates on a column still, most of that gets distilled out.
Okay.
And so it's, I mean, it's, again, it's funny because it's like alcohol is a poison. So it's like, are there poisons left in your poison? Like, alcohol is not good for you.
That's
like
a good point.
Yeah.
Like, that's funny.
I prefer my crack to be artisanal. Yeah. Like, it's a fucking crack, man. Yeah. You're not smoking it to be.
You must not do enough crack.
Yeah. No, only the premium stuff.
I hope he didn't till the ground for that. That's funny.
I keep thinking about Nancy just. She comes in to work at a desk, and she's just blackout drunk. And they slide her. She's like, Nancy, we're going to have to get you a try one.
I don't want no more.
And she just gives the thumbs up. Yeah. Like, it's like Groundhog Day or something. Right.
You should. There's videos online of people who do the tastings for like different distilleries, big distilleries. You know, a company like Maker's Mark or something will have like 4 or 5 people that work there, just quality control. And that's all they do is sip whiskey and make sure as the barrels are aging that it's tasting the way it's supposed to.
Golly.
It's a good gig.
You get that gig.
I know. It's interesting seeing what makes a company successful, especially in the alcohol business, because it's the competition is so fierce. Yeah. So, what do y'all do different? Is it more social media? Is it more advertising? Like, obviously, it's a good product and it tastes good, but what like separates y'all from other competitors?
Yeah, I mean, start there, right? Make a good product. Right. That being said, you don't need to make a good product to be successful. There's a lot of really bad celebrity tequila out there that it's doing just fine.
What's the worst one? Is the Rocks good?
So good and bad are different words. I'll say that it's not, in my opinion, it's not made well, but it doesn't taste bad.
It's got a good name though.
Yeah. Does it mean anything?
I don't know.
Push two like words together.
Like Terramana. When he says it
like
on
terroir and something,
when,
I don't know.
When he says it on Instagram, dude, I'm like, fuck. I don't drink, and I'm like, I would drink the fuck out of that.
I mean,
Terramana.
What about Clooney's?
It's sweet. So
Clooney's has been getting some.
And a lot of this stuff is like, unless you're talking directly to the guy, a lot of it is like, I don't know, it's like 80% true, right? But where Clooney, and I actually kind of like the story of how that distillery started, if it's true, you know, print the legend sort of thing. But the original story behind that is kind of cool, behind George Clooney's tequila. But as far as I know, it's not made where they originally started. Like, they were just buying tequila off of some distillery, like near where their house was in Mexico. And then they just were putting it in unmarked bottles and sent, you know, taking it back with them and giving it to friends. And that's the story of how it started. As far as I know now, with the amount that they're putting out, it's not that at all. So what originally was Casamigos is not what it's in the bottle today. Now it's mass produced. It's like an MGP, like a big facility that just produces bulk shit. The big difference between what I would say like good tequila and bad tequila is the process of how they're cooking the agave. So there's a thing called a diffuser, and like a diffuser can make tequila basically like what a real distillery in Mexico would take like 6 months to make, they can make in a day. And so instead of like roasting your agaves, usually you just like steam like a brick oven, or they use like an autoclave, like a big stainless steel oven to roast the agaves. You kind of break it down before you ferment it. This will just run it through a conveyor belt and blast it with like really hot water, like steamed water. So you're not actually roasting the agave. It's referred to as a diffuser. That's what the big brands use, because you can just pump out volume. And that's shit. No one who makes tequila will say that that's okay. They're like, yeah, that's trash. That's bullshit. That's not real tequila. And so that's what most of those big brands do. Does that mean it tastes bad? Not always, but it's not proper tequila. You know, I used to work with a really good tequila brand. They make stuff super old school. And when we would do tastings, people were like, man, I always hated tequila. I like this. And I'm like, no, you've never hated tequila. You've just never had tequila. And the guy whose family owns the company, he'd be like, that's like saying I hate whiskey because you had Fireball. Like, you've not had whiskey. Like, is it cinnamon whiskey? Yeah, but that's not fucking whiskey. And so that's what we would always say. If you're just having like celebrity diffuser tequila, then you're not really having tequila. Mm. And that the worst is 818. 818 is the worst tequila I've had. It's so bad.
Is that the clear bottle?
No, that's what's her face? One of the Jenners or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What's your favorite?
Kylie Jenner's.
What's your favorite tequila?
brands that I like and brands that I think make really good shit, Arete. It's the Ordendine family. It's one of the four original families that invented tequila in Tequila, Mexico. So, like, mezcal is kind of the overarching category. It's distilled from the agave plant. Tequila is, like, a subset specific style of mezcal. They call the Godfathers kind of the four original families. This is one of those families. That distillery where they make it now is the third distillery to ever open for tequila. And their brand is called Arete. And I used to represent them in Tennessee.
Yeah.
And their stuff's great. I've gotten to hang out with their family and stuff. They make phenomenal tequila. It's very smooth tequila. So if you're looking for like a little more of a bite and stuff, so it's like personal preference at that point. But in terms of like history and who those guys are and the quality of their product, that's one of my favorites. And then Fortaleza makes great shit. And so does, I like Tequila Ocho. It's a really good brand.
These don't do the diffusion?
No, these are mostly like slow roasted. Okay. They're making proper stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, you learned me on that.
Yeah. It's a shame that these celebrities can just slap a face on the bottle or slap their name behind it, and then it sells. Like, what's Jake Paul, not Jake Paul, but Logan Paul or whatever, that prime
water.
Yeah.
It's like $30 bottles of water.
I know. And it's selling the shit. Like, and that's with everything.
Yeah. Well, that goes to like what you're asking is like, what makes the brand? It just depends on how you want to evaluate a brand doing well. Like, is it a respectable brand or is it a brand that makes money or is it both? And so, we're making money, obviously, like we're selling good, our brand's growing, but at the end of the day, even if we didn't sell a ton, it's a great brand. We make quality stuff. I'm really, really happy to be a part of it. There are worse, less quality whiskeys that are selling way more than us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so depending on how you want to measure success.
Well, let's get into your marketing side. You were talking about the change in the bottle and then also the artwork on the bottle.
Yeah, so rebranded everything, and I think it's worked out for us really well. Our bottles now, we use an artist, Mark Burkhart. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing his last name right. He's an official artist for the state of Texas, and so he can be commissioned to do huge pieces for anything the state of Texas wants him to do. His personal art is amazing. Stuff's really, really cool. He does our labels, so he'll make a giant painting, kind of take a photo of that painting and then put it on our bottle. So every bottle is a different painting of his that he's done for us. They're always a girl on the front, like a lady, but each one is completely different.
What's the thought behind that?
I don't know where the lady came from. Yeah. I know that in general, what we're going for is to not be a new distillery that looks like we started in the 1800s, which is what everybody does. They're like, we're a year old distillery with a bottle that looks like it dug it up on the ground in West Texas, you know, 100 years ago. It's always so stupid to me. I never understood why people do that. And then in one of our marketing meetings, actually, they brought that up. And they're like, yeah, we don't want to do that. I'm like, that's awesome.
I like
that. I totally agree. But yeah, I mean, it's like you'll see new brands pop up all the time and they look like they're old as shit. And like, dude, it's a 2-year-old distillery. Like, why are you doing that? So we wanted to look different. We wanted to look modern. We also want to appeal to people who aren't just the standard bourbon drinker, the guy that's, you know, trying to collect every cool rare bottle. We want to appeal to people who aren't that, but also like whiskey.
Does he only do still Austin whiskey or does he do other drinks?
As far as I know, I don't think he's doing art for other beverage brands. He does a lot of personal work and I know he does a lot of commission work, but his personal work is fucking cool as hell too. Like I want to get a piece.
That's really dope, man.
Yeah, I mean, our labels are awesome. There's nothing on the shelf that really looks like ours.
What made y'all go with this guy?
I don't know what that relationship was, how they ended up using him in the first place.
It's Nancy's son.
I think he's originally German, lives in Texas. But it's just part of that doing things differently. Like if you go to our branding, if you look at our Instagram or our Facebook, like we're all about art, artists. Obviously, we're based and headquartered in Austin, which is the live music capital of the world. So
is it still though?
Yeah.
Is it
still Austin?
From Nashville. So I don't know. Yeah, it's funny because we have billboards in Austin that say, we're still Austin.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we're still Austin, but we're also, hey, this town is still Austin.
Right.
It's a great town. People shit on all the time, like, oh, the tech bros ruined it. And I'm like, they tend to ruin a lot of things, but Austin's still amazing. It's such a great town.
Yeah. Well, I'm on the fence about it.
Oh, you were there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew Austin when it was actually Austin, though. Like the old school Austin.
I mean, I lived there like in 2009 or something, 2008. I did my stint off of Oldtorf. Everybody's got to do a stint.
Yeah.
Apparently that's where everybody lives so for like funny. A year.
Yeah, it's true.
I did my year there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I think the only problem I have with it now is the people that were originally from Austin, unless they have a lot of money, they're not there. all the people that were in Austin that made Austin are actually living on the outskirts of Austin now. And now the people that are in Austin are from, I don't know, California or
the guys wherever. Who can afford to live in the city.
Yeah.
I honestly see it as a twofold problem though. It's like one, people moved in and said, a $2 million one bedroom house, that's a steal. Because in California that, you know, and I get it, the pricing, whatever. But in general, Austin has always been such like a fucking annoying, cocky city of like, we're not going to grow. We're going to stay weird and small. And it's like, yeah, but like a million people are moving here. So like, maybe you should grow a bit. Yeah. And the mayor in the city has always been like, nah,
no.
We're going to have two highways and they're going to be busy all the time. Yep. Deal with it. And then like, yeah, I mean, it's, they what did you think was going to happen?
They have a statue of a homeless person there.
Nice.
McConaughey, remember his speech?
What was it?
About just, it was just back and forth and nothing made sense. We're going to grow. But not too much.
Yeah, what makes Austin beautiful? Yeah.
We're gonna.
Have you heard that?
Well, welcome, but don't all y'all come over here. It's
like, you're welcome.
It's just conflicting comments all the way through. Yeah,
that's funny.
I mean, but that's always been my view of Austin. I'm born and raised in Houston, so I could give two shits. You know, I'm a Houstonian. Way too hard. I eat it up too much.
Austin's a vibe for sure. It still has the vibe. So.
Yeah, it's still there. There's bits of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's getting pushed out, you know? Like, I mean, shit, we used to go drink on Rainy Street. It's not really a thing anymore. It's about to be gone. I think they're getting rid of all of it.
All the old school. Well, it's going to turn into everyone's leaving Hollywood because they don't want to be in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And Austin's turning into like a mini Hollywood now.
It's definitely a little bit. Thanks to like Joe Rogan and those guys, it's going to be like a comedy mecca.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why would you heard they're getting rid of Rainy?
Yeah, it's gone. It's so if you've seen it anytime recently, like it used to just be a bunch of bungalow houses. They turned into bars.
Yeah.
And then slowly those houses turned into bars. Half those houses are gone. They're like apartment complexes now.
Yeah.
Like business on the bottom and apartments above it. There's only a couple of those bars left. And then they're, as like leases and stuff come up, they're kicking all of those out. And then they're trying to revitalize some part of the river that kind of was popular for a while. And so I guess the city is trying to like take those bars and stuff and go, hey, we'll offer you a space over here.
Oh, wow.
They're doing a lot of work on the east side, which is kind of cool because the west side, there's no more room to grow on the west side. So they're going to have to clean up the other side of I-35.
Yeah. It's getting there. I mean, like E6, we used to go drink there all the time and we used to go to Shangri-La. On E6, and now when I go, like, we pulled up, and I didn't recognize it because nothing around it is the same anymore, and I didn't realize that was at the same bar. I'm like, oh, shit, that's it? Damn. That's where we used to drink all the time? It used to be, like, an abandoned field next door. Now it's, like, a $1 million apartment complex.
Yeah. It's nice, man.
So what can people expect when they go to y'all's downtown establishment?
So we're on South Congress, so if you're, like, where all the kind of shopping stuff is on South Congress, some bars and restaurants and shops and stuff, just go a little bit further down, and that's our distillery. We're in a little thing, I think they call it Beverage Row. So we share basically a wall with San Elmo Brewing. It's like Austin Cocktails. I think there's Austin Sake. There's a coffee shop in the corner. So there's a bunch of, like, little beverage brands there. Our distillery is there. We have two big buildings. You'll see, like, three big grain silos in front of our place. We have a bar inside, so we make cocktails. You can go hang out at the bar and get a tour, get swag and stuff there you can buy. It's really cool. We do a ton of business out of that bar. We have a little outside courtyard area with a food truck, and we do shows out there. We're like a BMI, which is like a music publishing rights company. They do a lot of like events there and stuff, little showcases.
That's really, really cool.
And then where our offices, some of the offices are located, kind of a big open space where we use it as like an event space, so people rent it out and use it for stuff.
Do y'all sell the still Austin? Do y'all sell outside of Texas too? Obviously, right?
Yeah. So right now we're in all of Louisiana, and then we just launched in Illinois pretty recently. So we're in like kind of Chicago and surrounding, and then we have a relationship with Total Wine. So it's called like Spirit Direct, I believe, and they sell our stuff in Total Wines in states where we don't have full distribution. So you can't buy it at bars and restaurants there, but you can buy a bottle at the Total Wine. So we have a pretty good relationship with them. If you go into any Total Wine, basically in Texas, you'll see a display of our stuff.
How hard is it to, if you're from Texas and, you know, you're selling your product in Texas, how hard is it to sell outside of the state? Is it difficult? Do you have to do any kind of like permits or?
Yeah. I mean, you got to find a distributor and they're the ones who bring it in and then they distribute it. Okay. We can get into the laws. The laws for every state's a little bit different. There's, you know, what we call like Well, there's like regular state. So I came from Tennessee. The distributor sells directly to bars and restaurants and liquor stores. So we would talk to a brand that wasn't in the state. So like that tequila brand I used to work for, Rete, they weren't in the state of Tennessee. We contacted them and said, hey, would you like to be? They said, absolutely. So they register their brand for the in the state of Tennessee. And then we sign a contract being their exclusive distributor for the state. So then we buy directly from them. It comes to our warehouse. And then we sell it to bars and restaurants. And all of those points just add on a percentage to the cost. And then you collect your fee. And by law, you have to go through a distributor. So on spirits, you couldn't just, you know, Arete can't just bring in a truck and start selling it to bars and restaurants. They have to go through someone like us.
Why do states enforce that? Why can't we just sell directly to a consumer?
I mean, as far as I know, it's like, it's stuff that's from prohibition rules that were created after prohibition ended. I don't know what the mindset is. There's also control states where the government controls all the alcohol. So you buy your liquor from a government run liquor store. And that's how bars and restaurants buy there too. And it has to go through some pencil pusher if there's going to be a new alcohol brand, instead of like a guy like me in Tennessee bringing a brand to the state and going, hey, we like your stuff, you should come to the state, let's make it happen. It's some government guy who gets to decide that.
That's so wild. Yeah, man.
So how's it in Texas? I want to hear this. Again, I
didn't. So most states, I think essentially all states other than control states, have what they call a three-tier system. So it's the what we call the supplier. That's me. I'm the guy that works for the brand, so we're the supplier. And then there's the distributor. We sell to the distributor. The distributor sells to bars and restaurants. So that'd be the last one, liquor stores, bars and restaurants, and that's how you get it. So there's three points of contact between you and my whiskey. And Texas has a four tier. So me, the supplier, sells it to the distributor. The distributor sells it to Specs, and Specs sells it to you and bars and restaurants. And Specs, that fourth tier, we refer to as a Class B. It's a Class B liquor license. And then if you go to any bar, just look at the bottle. You see that little sticker that's somewhere on the label. It's a little kind of rectangular sticker. That is gone through the Class B. It proves that they've paid their taxes on that bottle and put that sticker on it. And then it gets sent to the bars and restaurant. And that's Specs.
How long has this been in this way in Texas?
I think since Prohibition. I think since alcohol was legal. I don't know how long Specs has been around, but it's always been that. As far as I know, like the wholesale Class B warehouse.
Like there's been a four-tier system in Texas for as long as...
I think so. I mean, I don't remember when it... I mean, I wasn't born.
There's got to be a conspiracy theory in somewhere, right? Like someone's uncle works for the government and also works for Specs, right?
Well, there's some of that stuff we were talking about.
Well, I mean, it's 100% a monopoly. Like, yeah. It just is. Anyone who's in the alcohol business... So if you work at a bar or restaurant, you have to buy your stuff through a Class B. So, like, we're all up to speed on that. You buy it from a Class B. There used to be multiples, and there's a couple small ones still in Houston. So, you can use, like, Tony K's instead. Small liquor store. You can use them. They're small. They can't supply to every, you know, bar and restaurant in the city. So, they only work with a couple bars and restaurants. There's one other one. There used to be a really big one called Goody Goody, which is based out of Dallas. And they were phenomenal. That's who I used to work. I'll do a lot of work with. Specs bought their Class B. So they still have liquor stores, but they don't do Class B anymore. So if you're a bar or restaurant, you can't buy your alcohol from Goody Goody anymore because they no longer have a Class B. Specs bought it. So now all of the business that was Goody Goody's is now all Specs business. So it's 100% monopoly. It just is. Who else are you going to buy through?
I want to go look at this up later.
You said Total Specs? Wine, right?
Total Wine, but they don't do Class B. So we can go buy booze there, but bars and restaurants can't. Okay. If it's a spirit. Spirit has to have tax ID sticker on it. It's got to go through a Class B. That's that fourth tier.
Dang.
Otherwise, if there wasn't that system, you'd buy it from, you know, any liquor store, wherever you want. In Tennessee, if we were running out of shit at the bar, like, just go down to the liquor store and buy it and then bring it to your bar.
I went to Tennessee.
I don't think technically that's legal, but they can. There's no way for them to really track it. Like, but yeah.
I went to Tennessee recently, and it seemed like they had a tax on alcohol, like more of a tax than
very high.
What is up? Are they trying to get people to stop drinking but keep Broadway open?
Yeah, right. No, they want more money. What else is there to do in Tennessee? I mean, it's not a very popular state. It's like 6 million people. Houston is bigger than the state of Tennessee population wise. They need money. Where do they get money from? What's most people that travel there tourist, and so
they call it a syntax.
You can call it that. Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a revenue generator. It makes tons of money, and so if you just raise the taxes a bit, then you just make more money. So, yeah. Theirs is really high though. It's their food and then alcohol tax. So if you go out to dinner and have a couple of drinks, your taxes are like 22% added to your bill or something like that in Tennessee. It's crazy. Yeah. I think Texas is like flat around 8. Everything's just like 8% added to everything.
Yeah.
Like 8.3 or something like that.
When we were going out, it's like the tip basically. Well, I mean, a lot more. Well, 20% cheap is supposed to be the tip. So.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like built in a tip that the waiter or bartender doesn't get.
But they don't get it.
So now you have to do it again. 40%.
Yeah.
Yeah. So add 45% to your bill in Nashville and that's what you pay.
I have a theory that once Austin and Texas gets full, everyone's going to move to Tennessee.
Let them have at it. While I was in Nashville, it was growing like crazy. Tons of people moving there.
Yeah.
It's another one of those same sort of things where people are like, oh, I can do my job, but in a cheaper city. And I can buy like a mansion for what I live in a small apartment for in LA, New York. Yeah. So yeah, a lot of people are moving there.
There's no state tax either.
State income.
They just got enough taxes to...
Yeah, it's a tourist. Yeah. I mean, Nashville is keeping it alive, so.
Yeah. I mean, look, we work with specs. We have to work with specs. I don't want to shit on specs. But there's no way in hell you could look at the system that we have in Texas and not see it as 100% monopoly. I mean, let's say that, like, the owner of specs, you pissed him off, right? I'm just hypothetical. Like, let's say I started my own brand and that guy hates me. I dated his daughter, didn't call her back or something. He can just go, I'm not going to carry your stuff.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
How the fuck are you going to buy it? Like, how are bars and restaurants going to buy my stuff?
What I don't understand, and I'm going to look this up later, but how did they position themselves into becoming this, like, this gatekeeper to distribute alcohol? Like, how did they get there? Because obviously they started, I think they're like a family started business, right? Like in the 70s?
Yeah, they started here.
Yeah. So how did they get
to this? Are you not familiar with how money and politics work?
No. Educate me.
Nothing. I mean, you can do whatever you want with money, right? Yeah. I mean, with the right amount of money, you can get anything done. I mean, you can do whatever you want. You shoot somebody in the middle of the street, 10 cops watch you.
So how much?
You got enough money, that's you're not going to jail.
So you sell them, Still Austin will sell them a wholesale at a wholesale price, right? Mm-hmm. And then they mark it up.
Yeah, so everybody marks up a price. I don't know the exact numbers, but like, let's say that my bottle is $20. That's what we sell it to. Southern Glaciers, that's our distributor. They make money by selling it, right? So then they mark it up, they sell it to specs. Specs on the Class B has to make money too. So it's a wholesale price. And when they sell it to a bar or restaurant, it's cheaper than what you'll buy for off the shelf at specs. But they still add a little bit on because that's how they make money on the Class B as well. So every point, every time someone touches that bottle, there's a little percentage of the price added to it.
I bet y'all go to the shelf or the bar and you see what they're selling it for and you're like, motherfuckers.
Well, so that's one of the things. It's like what my bosses, you know, have to do and what we've talked about is like when they have meetings with specs, they have to talk about what it's going to be on the shelf. They're like, hey, for us to grow as a brand, we want it at this price point. They don't have to do that. I mean, as far as I know, there's no law saying that specs can't just go, nah, we're going to double that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's a really like intense symbiotic relationship that you really have to have. And in my opinion, it's mostly, I mean, I think specs has all the power. They've got the upper hand. Yeah. I mean, we have to have those conversations. We actually want our stuff to be more premium. So we're okay with pricing being a little higher because we're a premium product.
Right. You want to appeal to a certain demographic.
Yeah, and we're okay with that. But yeah, it's just crazy how they I mean, they own the state.
I had no clue.
Legitimately own the state.
Yeah.
That's a mind fuck.
There's some other ones. Like if you get out in Austin, there's some other Class Bs. So like I think Twins and some other like liquor store brands, they also do Class B.
Oh, Twins is a...
I think in like certain parts, because it's not really in Houston. Houston, it's specs. Like they own the entire city. Since they bought the Class B, I'm guessing that's probably the same way in Dallas because Goody Goody was the big competitor and that's based out of Dallas. Austin has a lot more options. They keep their stuff a little more. They try to be a little more small mom, pa, and local. Houston's like, no, oil and gas chains. We don't care. And so Specs is king in Houston.
I guess they offered Goody Goody a good price for their...
There's no way in hell they did. Like, yeah. To give that up. I mean, because like, Specs makes a lot selling liquor, but most of their money is coming from the Class B. I mean, every bar and restaurant has to buy their stuff. from a Class B, and Specs is the Class B game in town. So they make so much money through that. If you go to the downtown Specs, the big one in Midtown, there's booze. You can grab a bottle if you're like a liquor store guy. You take it to the back. There's that back window you've probably seen. That's the Class B. So you can take it back there, and then you tell them your account. They'll add it to your bill, and then they'll pull a sheet out, and they'll put one of those tax stickers on it for you, and then you can take it, bring it to your bar, and sell it. So next time you're at a bar, just look at the back, and you'll notice those little stickers on every bottle. That's what that is. That's the Class B. So the bottle that I brought, if you take a look at it, there's that white sticker on the front. What happened is that that's the Specs in the Woodlands. Is it's a front retail store, but then it's also Class B in the back warehouse. So they warehouse stuff there, and they fulfill orders for bars and restaurants. Well, they fucked up and put stickers on the wrong bottles, to their fault. So they just tried to take the stickers off, but the stickers are designed to not be pulled off because they don't want bars and restaurants pulling the stickers off. So now I went in, and there's like six bottles that just had a big white sticker over the front of our label that they tried to rip off. And I'm like, no one's going to buy this now. Right. Yeah, it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, that's bad. They put it right there too.
You, that's, I would imagine it's tough for still Austin and other companies, because you it's hard to foster a relationship with customers, right? Unless you have like a storefront like y'all do, right? And I mean, unless you're posting on social media and stuff, because you have to go through all these people, all these channels to reach the consumer.
It makes it harder to get. Because, like, we have a good relationship with Specs. Like, they're not horrible people. They're just welcome to capitalism. Right. You know what I mean? They kind of own the Class B. So we need to have a good relationship with them. And we do. They see us as a brand that's growing, and they want to invest in that, which is cool. So does our distributor. They're like, you guys are going to be a big deal, so we want to get behind it while it's still growing. So it's cool. But it's that barrier of entry to get into bars and restaurants is a pain in the ass. So if I'm a smaller brand and Specs, or the supplier or the distributor or the Class B just doesn't quite have faith in a brand, and they don't want to carry tons of it in their warehouse, a bar restaurant might get, we could just zeroed out. So they'll place an order for it, and then when the order comes for all their booze, you'll get it. It'll say zero on your invoice, and it's just like, oh, well, what happened? I ordered that, and like, we didn't have any.
Yeah.
And that didn't have any is not that the supplier didn't make a bunch. It's that they didn't keep enough in the warehouse. It costs money, right? So every pallet is a set number of dollars to that business of storage space. Essentially, it's like, what's costing us money every second that it sits here? And if we don't sell it to a bar or restaurant, if they don't order it from us, it's just costing us money to have it stored. So they try to guess, like, hey, this is how much you went through monthly. You went through 200 cases, we're only going to order 200 cases. So if you end up selling 201 cases, whoever ordered that one case is going to get zeroed on it. Because it doesn't come from the actual brand. And so it's hard for a lot of smaller guys. There's a brand I won't mention that has started recently in Houston, and roughly recently. And I was just talking to them, and they were like, yeah, we're having a lot of issue getting zeroed out. Like, we're trying to gain new accounts. And the new account is placing an order and they're getting zeroed on it. And they're like, we have plenty of it. Like, we've been making tons. We have plenty of product. We can't get our distributor, and we can't get the Class B to carry enough of it to meet the growth.
Yeah. So whenever you're marketing or, trying to promote the product, how do y'all do that? Do y'all have to do it through Specs, or y'all do it by yourselves?
No, I mean, we act independently. So I go to the Specs stores, make sure our product's on the shelf, make sure it's stocked, make sure I have a good relationship with who's running whatever that Specs store is. Because if someone walks in and it's like, I want a bourbon, I want them to sell my shit over everybody else's, right?
Right.
So I go in and try to make sure those relationships are good. I don't really have much say about anything else outside of that, whether they carry it or how much they carry it. That's all above me. But yeah, I mean, growing it in the market, I mean, that's my job, and I act independently of everything. I go represent the brand. I mean, that's how I met.
Yeah. So how do you do guys? That? Yeah. Like, I'm having a hard time.
Buy drinks for people, go to bars and restaurants. Yeah. I mean, a lot of what I do is make relationships with bar owners and bar managers.
Okay.
Be like, hey, here's my stuff. Do you like it? Let's do something. And they're like, okay, cool. Yeah. I like your stuff. Let's do an event. So we throw parties, we throw events. Once they buy the stuff, I'll go in there and support them.
Dude, that's cool.
Yeah.
Sign me up. Fuck, I'm going to go work there.
The supplier side of alcohol is a good gig.
Yeah.
It's a good job.
So you cover all of the Houston area? Or
it's like East Texas. So okay. It's like Galveston, kind of all the way up to College Station.
Oh, mostly shit. Based in you got Houston. College Station.
Yeah.
Fuck, you son of a bitch.
Yeah. I haven't been up there yet.
Are you married?
No.
You son of a bitch.
I'm excited about it. I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to go up there, I don't know, in a month or two. I'm going to go up there and spend a couple days hitting bars and restaurants and liquor stores and stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, that guy, it's in a lot of other companies, we call them brand ambassadors. They call us kind of sales managers. But it's I represent the brand. I'm just an ambassador for the brand. So my job is just to make sure that people are drinking our stuff and are aware of who we are and how we operate and, you know, our culture as a company. Yeah. It's a good gig. So I meet people, I drink, I buy drinks for people.
Well, it's kind of like the main mission of the company. Like when you're selling, you're still Austin. Like how do you sell this to people?
Yeah. I mean, we're aiming to be like kind of perfect the art of Texas whiskey. Historically, Texas whiskey has always been shit on as being terrible. And I think they were right for a long time. There wasn't really any good spirits coming out of Texas. Just wasn't our thing. It's like a beer mecca. There's phenomenal beer in the state of Texas. Historically, there hasn't been a lot of really good spirits being made here. It's not true anymore. I think anyone who says that just doesn't know what they're talking about. And so that we're part of that. We want to increase the, you know, the value and the perception behind Texas spirits. We want to increase that. So that's kind of our goal. That's kind of our saying moving into this year is the art of Texas whiskey. That's what we're aiming to do. But yeah, I mean, we're a different company. We're a gay-owned company, which is pretty rare in the booze industry. We cater to artists and musicians and painters. Most people don't. So we just did a whiskey fest in Beaumont this weekend, and like all the Texas distilleries there are cowboy hats and cowboy boots, and they have big Lone Stars on all their bottles and stuff like that. And they're all kind of catering to a very specific type of person. Mm. And we want everybody else. We're like, no, it's all the other people who also drink whiskey who don't look like that and don't wear cowboy boots. Like, you know, wear them if you got them. But we're aiming for people like me who rock skinny jeans and white sneakers. You know what I mean? That's not typically, if you were like at a meeting with some big whiskey company, they wouldn't see me as the demographic, but I am. I drink a shitload of whiskey. I know a lot about whiskey, and yeah, so that's kind of what we're aiming to do.
That's cool, man. That's so interesting. I guess fucking demographics play into every damn field, everything, don't they?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like a nuanced thing, I guess.
Yeah. So as an outsider for you guys, like, how do you see, what was your perception of how the booze business works?
I thought they just, I didn't think they bought it from Specs. Yeah. I thought they bought them from whatever distributor they wanted to get them from. Mm. So when you told me that the other day, I was like, I drink a lot. So I don't, I mean, I bet I never asked questions about it, I guess. I thought it was like Tito's sending them out to all the bars. Mm. I didn't think it went to a hub and then got sent or got marked up. I thought they bought it at wholesale from Tito's and then sent it out.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird behind the scenes stuff, man. It's like, I don't want to like necessarily shit on brands, but like there's a lot of brands that say things and just aren't true. They're like, oh, we're a distillery in Texas. I'm like, oh, cool. Like, where's your distillery? And they're like, well, it's being built. And I'm like, well, then what the fuck's in your bottle? Like, they're just buying shit from other states and then bringing it back to Texas, putting it in a bottle and calling it Texas whiskey. Mm. It's not even made there.
That's motherfuckers.
Yeah.
It's like Fredericksburg.
The wine.
Like 80% of those places don't grow grapes. grapes out there. They can't grow them to save their lives.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, shit.
That, I mean, that happens a lot. That's a lot of brands. I mean, so like Redemption Rye, if you've seen that bottle, I think they may have a distillery now, but for a long time, Redemption Rye, Knob Creek Rye, and Bullet Rye are all the same whiskey. It's all being mass produced at MGP, and then they buy it, and, you know, they'll age it, put it in a different barrel, and then sell it as their own. But they didn't distill any of that stuff. I think a lot of those guys maybe have distilleries now, but for a while it was all MGP juice. I mean, some of those companies were sued multiple times because on their packaging it was misleading people to think that they were distilling the juice that's inside, and they weren't. I know Redemption a couple times. God, I hope a lawyer doesn't watch this. Allegedly, they had to change their label because they were just lying to people. I think Tito's originally had to do that too.
Is Tito's like originally from Austin or from Texas?
The brand is there. Yeah, absolutely. They don't make anything. So here's how you can tell if a distillery makes anything. Are there grain silos there? Mm. There's not a grain silo there. How are they making it, right?
So Tito's is bringing that shit in.
Yeah, they're bringing in juice. As far as we know, it's pretty close-lipped, but everyone in the industry is like, yeah, it's MGP vodka. It's corn, 100% corn. They bring it to Austin. They run it through their stills. So they can legally say distilled in Austin because what about, it technically has been distilled in Austin.
What about Deep Eddy Vodka? Because that's another like Austin-based company, right?
Yeah. I don't know if, I mean, I know that they make a lot of their flavor stuff, you know, in-house. I think they're base spirit. I have no idea if they make it or not. But there is no such thing as a Tito's tour. Like, you can't go there and get a tour of the facility. If you went there, you'd see there's no grain silos. There's no corn being housed to mill and then ferment and distill.
Do you find...
Allegedly.
do people, whenever you tell them and you explain this side of it, do the light bulbs turn on? Do they care? Or they're like, I don't give a fuck. I just want to drink.
Honestly, most people seem to be interested in it. Okay. But the general public of alcohol, like not people like me and nerds who have been on this side of the industry for a while, they're coming awake to that stuff. Like if you talk to just the average connoisseur of whiskey, not like a professional, he's, you know, an oil guy but likes whiskey, he knows exactly what MGP is. He knows the company and he understands that he knows how that works, and he can probably point out a lot of MGP bottles on the liquor store shelf. So like the general public I think is getting a lot more knowledgeable, and especially in American whiskey. Tequila, if you start explaining tequila and how that works and how it's made, most people have no fucking idea.
Yeah, how's it made?
Tequila's blowing up right now.
Yeah, agave spirits, man, like I think they're the fastest growing in the country right now.
Yeah, it's like it's different. People are becoming like, people were with whiskey, now it's like people just drink tequila only, and they're getting real into the process of how it's made. And I didn't know that Casa and all that was all what was the process you said?
Yeah, you use like diffusers.
Diffusers, yeah. I didn't know that. I thought that was a better brand.
Is it because of tequila or vodka? Is it because it's like low carb, or you know, not as many calories? I guess.
I don't know. It's pretty much the same. It's not a huge difference in calories between like a whiskey and a vodka.
It's coming from mezcal. It's like people are getting really into mezcal, then they're starting to see the other tequilas as, you know.
Yeah.
Casa Azul, you know, there's a little bell on top. That's a lot of marketing though, right?
Oh, 100%. And it's...
Do you think that one's diffused too?
I mean, I would say 99% guess. I'd say yes. 99%
guess. Allegedly. Yeah,
allegedly. They also... Another thing that happens is by law, if it's 1% or less, you don't have to say on the bottle of tequila that you've added sugar and caramel color and vanilla to it. So if you try tequila and it's a ton of vanilla and it's some celebrity brand, 100% they're adding vanilla to that to make it sweeter, more palatable to the American market. You won't get any vanilla on a Blanco tequila. Like, where is that vanilla coming from? Over time, oak barrels will impart some vanilla flavor into anything you're aging it in, especially in agave. You'll come through really sharp. But I mean, we're talking like it'd have to be in a barrel for years for you to like start to really get a vanilla flavor. So if you're trying like someone's reposado, it just means rested in Spanish. It should just be in a barrel for months and you're getting that much vanilla, then they're adding vanilla extract. Someone showed me a tequila that was at a bar and there was another rep in there. And she was like, hey, we're tasting this tequila. Do you want to try it? And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll try it. She gives me a little shot and I was like, 100% they're sweetening and adding stuff to this. And then she turned around and looked at the back of the bottle and was like, added caramel color, vanilla, and whatever. But if it's less than 1%, you don't have to claim that on the bottle.
Those motherfuckers.
Yeah. Man. That's why like a lot of the celebrity ones are super sweet, easy drinking.
Have you ever heard of Lotte Maestro?
I don't know. If I saw the bottle, maybe.
It has a top that has a shot in it.
Oh, yeah.
And then but it's tequila that's really dark, but it tastes like whiskey. Mm. You never had this one?
Mm-mm.
Man, if you get the chance, we started getting into that, and it's like drinkable. Like it's, you can drink it straight. It's like
Addictivo is like that. Have you seen that one? It's the weird bottle. It kind of looks like it's been twisted.
Uh-uh.
There's like a thing on top where if you hold it upside down or whatever, it'll pour a shot in.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's supposed to be like when you finish it, you have one more shot or whatever. Marketing again. But,
yeah,
it's good. It's pretty good. I don't know if it's quality stuff now that I've heard all this stuff. I don't know what anything is now.
Yeah. Well, so you do this all the time. You look at a bottle and you can just tell that it's been messed with. Like bourbon by law has to use a fresh American charred oak barrel, right? So burnt on the inside. It can't have been used for anything else before. So when you put your whiskey in there, you get a lot of color out of it over time, right? So longer it sits in there, darker it gets because it is taking more of that color out of the wood and aging your whiskey or whatever you're putting it in. most tequilas are using ex bourbon casks. So after they've used it, you can't reuse that bourbon barrel to make more bourbon because it's no longer a fresh barrel. So they usually either will age their rye or whatever else, or they'll sell them. So most scotch and most tequila companies are using ex bourbon casks. So if you go to like, so a good example, Arete, the brand I used to work for, they use Four Roses barrels. And I think Woodford Reserve. So if you go there, you'll see a bunch of barrels that say Woodford Reserve and Four Roses on them, and that's aging their tequila. But by that point, a lot of that color and stuff has been stripped out. And so 4 years of a bourbon in that barrel first, and then 4 years of tequila in it are not going to look the same, right? Even though they both started out completely clear because a lot of that color stripped out. So if you're drinking a tequila that is like darker than most whiskeys and it's only, you know, and they're claiming it's like an añejo, which is like a year in a barrel, a year and a half, you're like, okay, what the fuck is it? Dark brown. Obviously something else is happening, right? And so they're either coloring it or throwing wood chips or some shit in it to make it look darker, which they do that for whiskey companies.
Really? I'm sure there's all kinds of tricks.
Those bastards will get you, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's like if you go look at like scotch bottles, pull up like a 20-year scotch and it's not as dark as like Jack Daniels, right? Mm. And it's 20 years old. Jack Daniels is sure as fuck not 20 years old. But it looks black, right? It looks like motor oil.
It does.
And you're like, okay, well, why is that, which is probably like 6 years, 4 years old, why is that like motor oil and the scotch been sitting in a barrel for 20 years? It's straw. Mm. And so it's partly the barrel, and I'm not saying Jack Daniels add shit.
Oh, I'm
they claim to me they don't. I still think that black label's fucking got color in it or something.
It does, dude. I don't.
It's so dark and sweet.
It tastes like shit, I think.
The regular black label, I'm not a fan of. So they make some other good shit, but yeah.
What's on the like the horizon for 2023 for Still Lawson? You have any big events or anything?
I don't have anything super big. There's something called Whiskey Riot, I believe it is. It's like a whiskey event. It's booked way before I even got hired, so I think we're going to be a part of that. But I don't have anything crazy lined up yet. For Still Awesome this year, I think in like the third quarter, we're going to start releasing a bottle and bond series of whiskey. So right now, our core, we have the straight bourbon, we have our cask strength bourbon, our 100% rye, and our gin. So those are our four SKUs. And we do distillery only releases, and those come out pretty often. And then this year, we're going to start a bottle and bond series, which is a whole different rabbit hole of whiskey.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate the time. How can people follow y'all on social media and follow you on social media if you have it?
Yeah, I do. I'm James Corona. It's Carona.
It's a badass name.
Meant to be in the booze business.
I know, right?
Does Corona know about this?
I wish I were part of that.
Allegedly.
I'll be on a beach right now. Still Austin. I mean, we're on everything. So we have a fantastic team that handles like our social media and stuff.
That looks really good, dude.
Yeah, it's pretty solid. They do great work. So yeah, go follow us on Still Austin. And I mean, we're in every Specs and every Total Wine in the state. So we're there. Every Total Wine in the city has some sort of a display with our booze on it now. So yeah, we're everywhere. And then my job's to put it in more bars and restaurants. So we're working on that. But we're all over the city. You can find us around for sure. Our booze is good. It's pretty affordable. I think right now it's the best in Texas given the flavor and the price point. I think we're killing it.
Awesome, man.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate it, buddy.
I appreciate it,
guys. Have a good one. Rock on. Peace out.